It is my pleasure to introduce our presenter, Dori Hutchinson. Dr. Hutchinson is associate professor in the Sargent College of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences at Boston University and director of services division of the Center for Psychiatric Rehabilitation at BU. She received her PsyD in psychiatric rehabilitation from Boston University, and her research interests include campus suicide prevention, health education and lifestyle interventions for people with co-occurring mental illness and physical illnesses, and holistic health adult education that fosters readiness to change. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Hutchinson.
Thanks, Lisa. So I wanted to start today by talking about the culture of where I work, because we've been talking about how much culture impacts what happens in our programs and services and in the outcomes. And I think the culture of my little services division does play an enormous role in what happens when people come to the recovery center. So I'm the director of services of the services division at the Center for Psychiatric Rehabilitation. Sally is the director of research, and Marianne Farkas is the director of training. And we are we're not technically a clinic, though the university is pushing me to become a clinic. But one of the benefits of being a freestanding services division is that we can do interesting things, and we don't seek insurance reimbursement. People don't actually pay to use our services. We fundraise all of the money for our operational costs and our salaries and every last bit of it so that we can provide services that people normally wouldn't have access to. And then we can also, you know, push the envelope a little bit in trying new things. And so in 1999, we started a recovery education center, which is really an adult education program for people with serious mental health challenges. And we offer, just like an adult education program does, we offer a variety of courses with this idea that there's no wrong door, no wrong entry to one's recovery, and that people should have choices. What's been interesting about the evolution of the Recovery Center is that when we began, we were really proactively trying to have career and educational opportunities, personal development, and health and wellness. And within each of those categories, offering different opportunities, different levels of readiness to change interventions. So rather than having, particularly where health is concerned, all these sort of action-oriented interventions like, you know, Weight Watchers and quitting smoking programs that have really high fail rates, we know that when you offer people opportunities to contemplate change around their health behaviors, they will make steady progress towards that change. So we try to offer something for folks who are contemplating change and preparing for change and actually seeking to make active change. But over the years, we have more and more courses that are oriented towards health. And we do that because we have a student advisory board that we meet with on a regular basis, and they hold our feet to the fire, and they really they seek certain topics. And so many of the health courses we offer are courses that people can get in the community that are a little more alternative, that our folks may not have resources to access. So things like Reiki and Tai Chi and Qigong and meditation. We do supported fitness, we do food education, we do health education, we do illness management recovery, we do RAP, we do WAM. So we offer that range of health courses. But when I look at the number of courses we offer each semester, which usually runs between 20 and 25 courses, more and more of them are leaning towards health and health education, and it's what people are asking for. So with that said, I'm going to talk to you today about a course that we offered last year that we did a small little pilot study on mindful eating, and tell you a little bit about what mindful eating is and what the skills that are being taught, and then what happened to the folks who participated in the course. So I think we know that dieting and commercial weight loss programs are not an enduring approach to eating well, and really nutrition science believes this is because they entail a disengagement from the use of internal cues of hunger and satiety. They literally disconnect your mind from your body. And we also know that stress is related to nutritional behavior, and that many of all of us and many of the folks that we work with, stress will often drive their eating habits. Poverty, disease, negative emotions also play a role. And we were very interested in the use and have been interested in the use of mindfulness skills as one of a person's coping strategies for wellness and recovery. And mindfulness, if you're not familiar with it, is a non-judgmental awareness of the present moment, and it has its roots in Buddhism. So the interesting thing about mindfulness, and the woman who teaches this class, her name is Marjorie Jacobs, and she loves talking about this topic, is it is framed by the foundation of neuroplasticity, you know, the neuroplasticity of the brain. And neuroplasticity is our brain's capacity to change in response to experience. And it's a growing science, one that I think provides me with a lot of hope and optimism about recovery and why people recover and this ability for people to harness the power of their own brain to heal themselves. So neuroplasticity has been found that through mental training of the brain, it's fundamentally no different than other forms of skills training that induce healthy changes in people's brains and then in their behaviors. And we know that mindful eating is this sort of complex family of emotional, intentional, regulatory strategies that people use to cultivate healthy eating habits and behaviors and stress hardiness habits, which can result in people feeling well. And there are two primary skills that are taught in mindful eating. First is the skill of focused attention. This really helps involves teaching people to focus on the food that they're eating and the process that they're eating of how they eat in a very sustained fashion. And then the second skill is the skill of open monitoring, which teaches this judgmental stance of monitoring our eating experience from moment to moment, primarily as a means to recognize how we're feeling and what we're thinking while we're eating. And this is a skill that is taught also to help people calm their minds and be able to reduce distracting thoughts. In the research, functional MRIs have shown that when people learn these skills, it actually increases activities in several brain areas, primarily in their amygdala and their prefrontal cortex, which really drive our emotional and cognitive behavior. And then one of the really interesting findings to me is that mindful eating and mindfulness skills seem to reduce what they call neural noise in our brains. And what this does when we reduce the noise, it appears to strengthen the neural connectivity, which assists human beings to make behavior changes. And that can result in increased resiliency for folks. So I find it a really interesting finding through this research because so many of the mental illnesses are hypothesized to result in neural disconnectivity in people's brains. So this is something I think that deserves more study. There's also a growing body of NIH-sponsored research in obesity and eating disorders that suggests this very strong mind and gut connection. And we do know that it takes about 20 minutes for our brain to register that we're full. And so learning and teaching people how to eat with awareness and eat slowly through mindfulness has been shown in the research with people with eating disorders and who have obesity issues that it promotes healthy weight loss, it reduces disordered eating, it reduces depression and anxiety, and it results in increased distress tolerance. So the other piece of mindfulness skills that I feel is a nice parallel to the field of psychiatric rehabilitation is its focus on skills training. And really, it is about connecting people's mind, body, and spirit. People learn to observe their feelings, their behaviors, and their relationships with food. They develop a wise mind around eating, and then can have a more balanced relationship with their bodies, with their health, and with their food. And eating is something we have to do every day. You know, we can't choose not to eat. And it's an ever-present part of our life that for many, many people creates struggle and stress. And so finding a way that has an enduring impact on people's lives, I think, is very important. Mindfulness engenders awareness. So it also acts against what we see a lot of people doing, which is what we call mindless eating. And you may have had your own experience with mindless eating, and I can think of many of mine. You know, I come home and my kids have chips out on the counter, and I'm standing there, and I've had a stressful day. I've been in the car for an hour and a half, and I'm eating and talking and eating and talking, and I'm not even paying attention to how many chips I ate because I'm sort of, you know, crunching away my anxiety. And that form of mindless eating is something that many of us do. And so mindful eating counteracts mindless eating. And it's a very helpful framework for people. So I think we know that the folks that we work with have a lot of health issues, and obesity is a primary one. We know that smoking increases glucose tolerance, and so there are all sorts of issues that contribute to people's health and weight problems. But we know that mindfulness is a skill that has been linked to many positive health outcomes, and so providing the intervention to folks who are living with all of these issues may be a way for them to really, what we think about is sort of recovering their body as their home. They only have one body, and we want them to have a degree of wellness and functional health that they can operate in and do the things that they want in life. The other issue about mindful eating that is appealing is that it teaches skills that are distinct from the cognitive skills that are taught in weight loss programs. The skills that are taught actively promote an increased awareness of a positive and nurturing opportunity that are available in each person's food selection. So it doesn't mandate what you eat. It asks you to become more aware of what you eat. So it avoids this one-size-fits-all and what I would call sort of a cultural food incompetence. People eat what they have and where they live, and this approach allows people to do it with more awareness. It also, these skills provide an increased ability to discern the differences between emotional and physical hunger, which then help people in making more informed decisions about when they eat and why they're eating. Mindful eating also increases people's ability to resist using food to regulate negative emotions, something that we know happens a lot in the folks that we work with. And then also, mindfulness skills increase people's ability to cope with daily stressors, which often trigger mindless eating, and achieve a more balanced sense of health and wellness. So the class that we taught, we use what we would call a supported education framework. It is a class. It's not a group. People come to our program, and they're considered students. They're not patients, consumers, or clients. The course ran for 12 weeks, and they met twice a week for an hour and a half each session during the week. So there were a total of 24 sessions. And this was done because it is a skills-based class, and we felt people needed the opportunity to practice. These are skills that take practice. Students were encouraged to bring their own food for the lunch-based class. It ran from 12 to 1:30. For folks who didn't bring food or forgot to bring food, the facilitators brought extra food for them to share. And then the class was led by two folks. One is a peer, and the other person would identify herself as a family member. Both of them are practice in a community of Buddhism. So they sort of practice what they preach, and they are quite passionate about their lifestyle practices. So I want to tell you a little bit about the class. It's a highly structured class that has sort of the same format over and over and over. It begins with a review, and the review is really about people's experiences with eating and food. And then the class starts each time with listening to a bell. The bell is rung three times. Then the students are asked to take full 3 full breaths. So they are taught really how to breathe from their diaphragm. And in the beginning, they're taught to state the word calm. So they go calm on the inhale and then content on the exhale. And they practice that 3 times. So they're learning to take very deep breaths from their diaphragm. As many people breathe very shallowly. And so they practice that. Students, we use a hunger scale in this class, and students are asked to rate their hunger after the bell. And the hunger scale runs from 6, which says starved, 5 is hungry, 4 is taking the edge off, 3 is satisfied, 2 is full, and 1 is stuffed. So they rate their hunger at that moment. Then, in the beginning of the class, the instructors will recite a mealtime contemplation. And I brought a few of them so you could hear. Some of them are. And over time, students are then invited to do their own reflections and asked if they would like to bring one. And students do write them and bring them as they get more comfortable with the practice. But they might be something like this. I'm thankful for the food before me as a gift from nature, the sun, the earth, the water, which give life. I am grateful for this special opportunity to spend time in the company of friends eating together. I am grateful for this opportunity to take care of my body and mind so that I may work towards wellness and recovery. And so the class will recite this together. Then, the hard part, then they eat the food that they brought silently. And there's a little bit of music that might be played very quietly, instrumental music, sounds of nature, like a waterfall. Some of you may have those on your phones. And Marjorie and her assistant will coach folks during this silent eating to sort of guided eating, you know, focus on chewing slowly, taste the food that you're eating, savor the flavors, question the texture. So she will guide people to be really present in the moment while they're eating. It's really hard for people to do. And in the beginning, a lot of people feel very frustrated by it. They just want to chew their food and swallow it. And she'll ask them, you know, to hold the food. I want you to chew a bite and hold it in your mouth. And the very first time she ran this class, I had a student come downstairs really angry to my office. You know, I wanted to swallow my food when I want to swallow it. And just the encouragement to go very slowly is difficult. But what happens over time is that silent period gets longer and longer as people get better and more comfortable with sitting and eating slowly and enjoying the food. Once they're done eating, they're asked to rate their hunger again. So then they have 2 numbers. Then, after they've had their meal together, then there's a lesson on skills training. And we really try to utilize universal design learning principles with folks. So we're providing visual learning opportunities, physical learning opportunities. Marjorie does a lot of walking and standing meditations in the class, teaching people how to do that, teaching people different ways to breathe. A lot of music is employed, poetry, readings, pictures. There's all sorts of multimodal activities that she uses to engage people in the learning. And then there's a practice of whatever the skill that's being taught. There's some sort of exercise that the group does together. And then there's a homework assigned. And people will write a SMART goal for the week related to the homework. So it will be a small, specific, achievable goal. I will chew my food 3 times before I swallow this week while eating lunch type of goal. And then when they come back the following week, those goals are reviewed. What got in the way? What was hard? What was easy? What did you learn about yourself? The other thing that she's done to promote practice of the skills at home is that she has made CDs and tapes for students with these guided meditations and reflections on them, so they can actually put it on during their meal and use that as sort of a supported guide until it becomes more internalized. So here are the topics that are taught. There are 14 topics, and you can see that starts with really starting with training the mind to be present and focused, so that focused attention skill. Then learning how to use the hunger scale, and then the topics around moderation and balance, emotional eating, strategies to overcome and persist when you're trying to resist using old eating habits, practicing self-acceptance, self-compassion, and self-forgiveness. And what she does in this module is really helping people resist and refuse the guilt and shame that they may have about their own bodies, their body image, their health, what other people may say about their bodies and their health and their eating, building optimism, where really focusing on, you know, I can do this, I do have strengths, and I am a person worthy of eating well, I deserve this. Developing gratitude, and this is a big one for folks. And then practicing generosity through the sharing of food with one another, helping people do that. Talking about healthy foods that might promote health and recovery. Then focusing on personal and environmental awareness. Where am I in the moment? What's happening around me that triggers mindless and mindful eating? And then she does do one module on planning to eat well, creating shopping lists, preparing meals. We have access to a kitchen across the street where we've been able to go over and prepare a meal as a group and have a meal as a group. Jean Christeller is some of you may be aware of her. She runs the Center for Mindful Eating at Indiana State University. This is sort of a modification of some of the curriculum that she uses with her work in obesity and eating disorders. So Marjorie has taken this curriculum now through a couple of revisions so that it's optimized for the folks that we work with. So we did a very small pre-test, post-test type of evaluation of the class. We started with 20 students in the sample size. There were two students who dropped out. It's an aging demographic. It's interesting to me. A couple of years ago, I think, Sally, our average age of students was like 43, and now it's 50. But most interesting about this to me is that there were more men in the class than women. I haven't figured out why I find that so interesting, but I do, because it's not a class that I think in the past many of our male participants would have chosen. It would be interesting to ask them why they did. We did do a satisfaction. We always do a satisfaction survey of folks' experiences with the class, and so people were very happy with the class, enjoyed it very much. Her attendance rate averaged around 90%, so people were coming twice a week, which for our courses in our recovery center, we tend to offer, with the exception of the physical exercise classes, they only happen once a week for an hour and a half. So people made a commitment to this class that was stellar. We do seek people's medical records from their physicians and psychiatrists, so you can see that we had a fairly even split among some of the primary major diagnoses that people are given in the mental health system. And then their medical records indicated that about 66% of them had a co-occurring medical condition. And you can see that the top three are the ones that we keep hearing about, obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. So we chose to use two scales to assess whether or not students were learning the skills of mindful eating. These are instruments that have robust psychometric properties and are used all the time in obesity research. And they've been used in broad populations, men and women, multiple health conditions as well. So the mindful eating questionnaire has five subscales, whether or not people are able to develop awareness of their eating and of themselves, their ability to reduce distracting thoughts and be present in the moment, this disinhibition, the ability to kind of control your eating, emotional response, obviously eating in response to emotions, and then paying attention to external cues that might trigger mindless eating. There is also a total score that's calculated, and it's scaled on a 1-4 scale with a higher score indicating that people are making progress. So when you look at these numbers, you can see that we had significant results in the class, and that we had three subscales: distraction, disinhibition, and emotional response. We saw significant changes on those three subscales, actually at 0.01. And awareness was approaching significance at 0.052. And the only scale where people did not improve upon was the external cues. I'm curious as to what that might be about. It may have been not as much time spent on it, but if they're sort of hypothesizing that people are putting a lot of energy into being very present, that might take more time and more practice to be able to do all of those sort of regulatory responses around food. Then we looked at the three-factor eating questionnaire. This is also a questionnaire that is used extensively in obesity research, and it looks at people's cognitive restraint, their uncontrolled eating, and their emotional eating. And cognitive restraint is this sort of conscious capacity to regulate the amount of food you eat and how you eat your food. But it's sort of being conscious of your eating, uncontrolled eating, and emotional eating. In cognitive restraint, higher scores indicate progress. In the uncontrolled eating and emotional eating, lower scores show a change. So in our folks in cognitive restraint, we did see people being able to make changes in their relationship with food and eating while they were in the class. At a significant value. Then in the uncontrolled eating, we saw that decrease as well significantly, and people's emotional eating decrease significantly for the folks who are participating in the class. So we feel that the class is having some sort of impact on people's capacity to eat more mindfully and less mindlessly in terms of eating. And it offers people a more daily practice, an enduring approach to food. We didn't measure any health outcomes. The class was really promoted as a health education class where they would learn the skills and coping skills to strengthen their resiliency and wellness. It was not presented as a weight loss class. And in fact, there seems to be a lot of resistance to us offering weight loss interventions at our center. People, I think, have had a lot of failure with weight loss, and they didn't want that. But we had a lot of interest in this class. And so it may be a more, helpful way to invite people to this idea of eating healthy and this idea of functional health without so much of a focus on the number and the scale. So this is a small little program evaluation, and our hopes are that we can take it to the next level. As I mentioned, we fundraise all of our operating costs and money, and so we would be seeking funding to help someone do this. Maybe a postdoctoral student might take this on at some point, and trying to implement it on a larger scale with more folks, and also taking a look at health-related factors. But we have learned that people can learn the skills and can use the skills, and that it's an intervention that seems to be desired by the folks that we're working with, and may, with more practice, really help promote healthy eating versus weight loss. But it may result in weight loss as it's shown to have that effect in the broader population. So I'm going to stop there and ask if there are any questions or comments.